Hour number three, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe in for Robbie Stanley today on this Monday. Joe Rex Road in Knoxville. We say hello now to News 2 Sports Director Corey Curtis, who is on the line with us. Corey, good morning. How are you?
I am delightful this morning, Chase. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I don't always get to talk to you, so I enjoy when I do. And I know the Vols are feeling pretty good, punching their ticket to Omaha, and they should, because I even though they got a little bit of a scare over the weekend against Evansville, they ultimately find their way back. Do you feel like that chip on their shoulder is as big as ever, and they're just riding that and hopefully going to ride that into a championship?
Well, a few years ago, that chip was pretty darn big, with that group. I think the chip is starting to get bigger with this group. I think this group kind of just took care of business as season went along, but I feel like here as the postseason's come along, you know, that chip has gotten bigger and bigger, and the swagger's gotten bigger and bigger, and you know, it should. They're the number one team in the country. They've hit 7 trillion home runs. They're playing as an image of their head coach, which a lot of great teams do. So I think they go to Omaha as absolutely the team to beat.
Well, Tony Vitello disagrees with you. He actually said, Corey, they are the number one overall seed, which hasn't won since 99, so they are playing with house money. Which was kind of tongue in cheek. Did you by chance see his filibuster to start his presser last night?
I didn't see. I saw a post about it late last night that he went off about the question the day before about if they didn't make it to Omaha, you know, would the season be a failure? You know, I guess he had quite a bit to say about that.
Yeah, I would. I want everybody to watch it. I really. It was one of the most interesting press conference moments I've ever experienced, and I've been part of some doozies. So yeah, it was something else. Kind of a stream of consciousness. You know, there was a lot to it, a lot of different things drawn in. But yes, that is the gist of it. That he was ticked off about, you know, media suggesting that like this would basically be a failed season if they didn't win last night.
I hate to tell him, you lose to a 4 seed on your home field and you're the number one team in the country. That's a massive fail. A massive fail if they would have lost.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's kind of one of those. A lot of it is sort of like I was just saying, it's like, obviously, we judge by results, right? I mean,
well,
results
look,
are why
Vanderbilt
we're talking about this team.
And they lost to Michigan on that walk-off homer with the kid hitting 200. I covered South Carolina when they were the number one team in the country, and they lost in the Super Regional at home. I can't remember if it was Central Florida or Louisiana Lafayette that year. I've covered both those teams. Those were both fails. Okay, they were the best team in the country. There was no question those teams were the best team in the country, and they failed to get to Omaha. If this Tennessee team failed to get to Omaha, yes, you spin it however you want. They are great. It doesn't take away from the fact that they're a great team, but they did not live up to what their potential was.
So how do you?
And obviously, this sport is. Go ahead, Jess. Go ahead.
Yeah. So along those lines, because you know, one thing Joe and I have been talking about is, you know, Vanderbilt and Tim Corbin and, you know, Vandy fans be like, hey, this was our thing. You know, you guys had everything else and, you know, tongue in cheek there. But, you know, how much does Vanderbilt look at this season? And by their standards, this season was a failure. I mean, it was a very down year for Vanderbilt. So how much do they look at that as motivation and Tim Corbin look at it as motivation to maybe change up the game a little bit to try and get back into the conversation and, you know, hopefully by next year being that, you know, they're in Omaha too.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, there's a talent gap, right? I mean, we've talked about this. He needs more good players. And, you know, part of it is losing players that you recruit to the draft, you know, because he's lost those guys. But everybody, you know, who recruits really highly loses some of those guys. And so he's got to find a way to go back in and bring some of those David Prices, Pedro, Sonny, you know, some of those guys, J.J. Bleday, you know, whether it's through the portal or whether it's throughout of high school, he's got to find a way to bring some more higher end talent in to level up the field. And Tim Corbin is a winner, and Tim Corbin hates to lose, like Billy Bean in Moneyball, like more than he likes winning. I think he hates to lose. So I would be shocked if there is not an uptick for Vanderbilt next year. I don't buy that Tim Corbin's lost his fastball. Like the program's a little down from where it was, where it was the number one program in the country, you know, without question. And it just happens to be that the new number one program is just down the street. So you get compared hard to that. If this was Texas A&M and not Tennessee, I don't think the spotlight would be so hard on Corbin right now as to what's he going to do. There are people I worry about in this world. There are coaches I worry about in this world. That guy is not one of them.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think I was saying this weekend, you know, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, obviously you hate the Tennessee thing, but I think the fact that it's Tennessee makes it even more likely that Corbin's sticking, you know, staying in the job, sticking with it, and is going to do everything he can to get Vanderbilt back there, right? I mean, I think it just adds fuel to everything, the fact that it's Tennessee. Let me ask you this question, Corey, that we were talking about earlier. Outside of Tennessee baseball, which obviously is right on the cusp of winning a national championship, what pro or college sports team in this state do you think would be closest to winning a championship?
I heard the discussion, and it's really a tough one, because like I can make a case and I can shoot down a case. All right, like I hear the Tennessee football and I go, yeah, they're good, but is your roster really close to Georgia's? Is it really? No, it's still not. You know, and I could say with the Titans, hey, if Will Levis is the stuff, then maybe they got a chance. But there's a reason we see the same teams in the Super Bowl, same three or four every year, right? So are they really? I mean, would they be really? I think the Grizzlies are a ways off. You know, I look at the Predators, and if you can add a Matthew Tkachuk-type player, like they had the opportunity to make a run at a few years ago, I think that could put them in the conversation. Now, those guys don't grow on trees, and you don't know, but you know you've got the goaltending, you know you've got the defensive core largely. If you can just create a second line of scoring, I think you can put yourself into that conversation. I mean, you know, I mean, Edmonton fired their coach to start the year, and they're there. Now they have Connor McDavid and Dreisaitl. So, you know, they've got players, but you've got Philip Forsberg, and you kind of need another one. All right. And, you know, like I said, they don't grow on trees, but you know, you've got some other pieces, you know, with Ryan O'Reilly and Nyquist. And if Evangelista can grow, you know, he can give you another complimentary piece, but you need another dude to lead the way. And I think if the Predators, if Barry can go come through and get a dude this year, and he's got 9 billion picks to do it with, you know, he is armed to try to get something. So I'll say the Predators.
I mean, that was my answer. I think that the Predators are probably the closest right now. Corey, always appreciate it. Good to talk to you. And I'm sure we'll do it. You'll do it again next week with these guys, but I'm sure we'll chat soon.
Very good, fellas. See you at camp tomorrow. Or Joe, are you just going to stay in Knoxville forever?
I'm actually on vacation, so send my regards.
Okay.
For sure. Thanks, Corey.
All right, later.
Later. Corey Curtis, News 2, joining us. Yes, you are on vacation starting tomorrow for the rest of the week. Adam Vingen will be in for you, so looking forward to that. Coming up next, we'll reset the Vols and their quest for a championship in Omaha and much more. Robbie and Rex Road chase in for Robbie today. 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Hey, join us this Thursday, June 13th, for the grand opening of Dunkin' at 326 Harding Place as we broadcast. Robbie and Rex Road will broadcast live from 6 to 9. Stick around for your chance to win 100 days of free coffee. First 100 Dunkin' Rewards members in line starting at 9 will receive a free medium hot or iced coffee for 100 days on the Dunkin' app. That coming up this Thursday. Joe will be on vacation, but that's okay. Robbie and Adam will be there. So looking forward to that. The Vols punched their ticket to Omaha, and we'll head there once again. Joe, you've been bringing up all morning the filibuster or diatribe or whatever you want to call it that Tony Vitello went on at the start of his press conference yesterday. You were there talking about success. It was based off a question he was asked the day before. Now they're back in Omaha. So I guess we do consider this season a success no matter what happens, right?
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if they go 0-2 in Omaha, then again, we'll get back to the rivalry discourse. Vanderbilt fans will have a lot of fun with that and say, hey, how's that one win that you've ever had in Omaha doing for you? But look, the reality,
which is a thing. I mean, look, sure. I will say you can two things can be true here. This season can be considered a success because you got to Omaha. But you're the number one overall seed. If you go 0-2 and you're out, then that's a disappointment. And that's something that, you know, that's why Rick Barnes has gotten all of the, you know, vitriol. And I'm one of those people mm-hmm. over the years, because it's like, hey, you know what? You're great in the regular season, but you get to where it counts and you can't get over the hump. And so I know that, you know, I don't know how much Tony Vitello thinks about that, but there are going to be people that make sure he knows that. And sure. You know, Vandy fans or whoever or media or whatnot. But I mean, eventually though, you do have to cash in. Like, you do have to do it at some point. I think this can be the year. It's stiff competition, but you know, just getting there eventually becomes not good enough.
Sure. That's fair. And that's the thing. I mean, that's, to me, it's the kind of the gist of his filibuster last night is in, you know, he's saying I get to decide what success is, you know? So, and that's fine. And he's talking about things again, like the being a teammate. He was talking about the Evansville kid who smashed into the wall and missed the next day, but came out last night all banged up and found a way to play in the game. And all that stuff I fully respect. And also, we all know that results matter. That's why you keep or lose jobs. You know, you win or you lose. I mean, there's a scoreboard, you know. And so, yes, he will get plenty of crap if they go 0-2 out there. And it would be a big disappointment. It would still be a successful season. You're talking about SEC championship, SEC tournament championship, number one seed, College World Series. These are things that Tennessee baseball, it would be laughable goals for Tennessee baseball before Tony Vitello got there. But yeah, you're right, Chase. He's got to cash in. I think he's got a great opportunity this year. We talked about the field earlier. There are in particular just no pitchers that scare you
right
in Omaha. There's some good pitchers, but there is not a single pitcher, especially not on Tennessee side of this bracket, that really scares you. And so, you know, they should be able to with that ridiculously good lineup score some runs. You know, but when you talk about the getting it done and all that stuff, Rick Barnes, hey, look, Tim Corbin went through that too, right? I mean, I don't know exactly
sure.
where it came from or how loud it was, but it took him Corey mentioned the loss to Michigan in the regionals with the absolute best team in college baseball in 2007 with David Price. And it took him years to get to Omaha, then more to win it all. But that's the thing. It's of all the things Corbin has done. And I think 18 straight NCAA tournaments is really impressive. That is a level of consistency that might be the most impressive thing, but the thing that gives him basically the ability to, you know, stand up and fight against any sort of argument about his program or whatever, is the fact that he won the two natties, right?
I mean, right.
Like, those two natties still speak loudest, especially, of course, when it's like fan arguments. And that's still what it comes down to. So Tony Vitello, you keep knocking on the door, you're probably going to get there at some point. This just seems like a good opportunity to really make that deep run in Omaha.
Sure. And like, you know, this is coming from a Braves fan. You know, look at the Braves of the 90s. They won one championship. Now, they won
a
championship.
They were there every year.
They won a championship. But they were there every year. And, you know, that's what people always bring up. It's like, man, that team was so loaded. How do they only have one championship to show for it? Well, a lot of that had to do with this team up in the Bronx that, you know, came on in the mid-90s and kind of knocked them off their pedestal. I think, you know, Braves fans are kind of looking at now of, okay, they got one championship with this group. They're always kind of there. Like last year, they were the best team in baseball, and they get knocked out by the Phillies. So I know it happens, but if you get that one, then it shuts a lot of people up. If you're like Tim Corbin and Vanderbilt, where even though they only have two, it's kind of worked in a cycle where it's like, you know, they get the first one and then it cycles through, you know, a few years later, they get the second one. Maybe it cycles through again. They get a third one, you know, then, okay, you got nothing to – there's no argument. Like, you're doing it. Tennessee's got to get to that point. Like, they're there. They're in contention. They're the number one overall seed. Everybody's talking about them. If they win it all this year, then that argument completely – Vandy can't say anything. Vandy fans can't say anything. Nobody can say anything because they did it. They proved that they belonged. And then, obviously, it cycles back through. But – If you're just there every year, that's great, and you can like that, but the goal is to win the championship.
It is. It does bring up an interesting question, like from a fan perspective. I mean, the Braves are a great example of. I think that's a great fan experience. I know your team is consistently good. Yes, sure. You have to. And the thing is, you do have championships. Now, if you had no championships, that might be different. You know, that'd be the Buffalo Bills, right, of the 90s or whatever. But it's like there's that, and then there's like UConn basketball, which, and I know right now it's tough to bring this up because they won two in a row, so they're the top of the perch. But that program has terrible years. Coaches fired, doesn't make the tournament, non-factor, but whenever it gets close, it wins. Like if it gets to the Final Four, it wins every time, you know? So what would you rather have? Like inconsistency all over the place, bad years, but always cashing in, or consistent excellence, maybe not cashing in quite as much.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and you kind of have to decide, like, if you're, you know, if you're okay with a team that it's like, hey, you're always in the mix and that feels good. Like, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I'm proud of the Braves of the 90s, like, that they were there and they were, you know, if you look at just dominating pitching, I mean, they had the best pitching rotation probably ever. And so that was all great, but it's like you only have the one championship to show for it. And like 96 hurts because they probably should have had that one. Like they let the Yankees come back and, you know, let Joe Torre kind of show why he's a Hall of Fame manager. You know, but I think you kind of have to decide what, as a fan, like, Do you get to a certain point where that's not okay anymore? Where it's like, hey, what do we got to change? You know, I mean, look at Edmonton. Edmonton making the playoffs every year with the talent that they have. Okay, great. And there was times where they weren't. They had all these number one picks and they weren't doing anything with it. Then they get to a point where with Draisaitl and McDavid, but then they can't get over the hump and, you know, actually get to the Stanley Cup final. Now they're there. Now, you know, how this is going to shake out, I don't know. Game two's tonight. Florida took game one. But now you're at least in the conversation of, okay, our team is in the championship series.
Yeah, and I think, to me, the better fan experience is your team's always there, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, you'll complain at the end. But if you have that team that's consistently excellent, I think that's a better fan experience.
Right.
But obviously it gets frustrating at the end.
Like Bills fans – I were disappointed, but don't you think they would take going to four straight Super Bowls again? You
know, a lot of fan bases would.
Right.
A lot of fan bases would.
Like the Lions would probably take that.
Sure. Lions and Browns would love one. Cardinals, yeah. They'd love one.
Right. So what's going on out there? But yeah, so I mean, it's just kind of the eye of the beholder, how you look at it. 615-737-1025. That's our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. More of your calls, more of your texts. We also have Alanis Morissette tickets to give away. Stay tuned for that. Here on Robbie and Rex Road, Chase in for Robbie today, 1025, 1063 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063 The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Chase McCabe in today for Robbie Stanley. You know, we've had so much to hit with Vols baseball and a little Preds that, you know, we haven't even talked the Titans today. As they had mini camp last week, wrap that up. They'll have, is this the last week of OTAs?
Yes, this is it. It's kind of one of those weird situations with, because I think use it with Vrabel. You know, right. Mini camp was the last thing. I could be wrong about that, but I think that's the case. But yes, so we're back to an OTA week here with their schedule. Unless this is like how things have been formalized across the league, I'm not sure about that. But anyway, yes, it is the last week. It's OTA, so we're back to voluntary. So some of the guys who were there last week will not be there this week. And tomorrow is the open media day. So that'll be it. And then the next time anybody's out there with those guys on the field will be the end of July.
Yeah, and look, you know, I know that some people, Jared, freak out when guys aren't there and, you know, at voluntary OTAs. And,
right.
You know, yes, thank you. You know, I know it stands for organized team activity, but it could say optional team activities as well. You obviously want people to be there, but if they're not, like, I'm not going to – where I get worried is training camp. If somebody's not showing up for training camp, then okay, that's a problem. But right now in June, whatever. As long as they're doing their thing. You know, Derek's talked about it many, many times. He got to a point in his career where he knew what he needed to do. They knew what he needed to do. It's like, yeah, we'd love to have you here, but okay, whatever. We'll see it. We'll see you in July. So that's that. Yeah, that doesn't bother me.
Yeah, it's all situational. I mean, I do think that when you have a new coach and you have new schemes on offense and defense and things like that, I think that should be a little bit more of a motivator for veterans to be around. But like a guy like Jeff Simmons, for example, at this point, I think he's that guy. He's going to plug in this defense. He's going to know what to do in this defense. He's going to be a huge part of this defense. And okay, see you at camp, right? In the past, with, of course, you know, kind of like the same. Well, I guess they did kind of change offenses, but, you know, in the past in training camp, Derrick Henry, hey, man, sand pit, you know, do whatever you want to do. And, you know, we'll weave you in for a play or two here with the offense. But, I mean, he was still there, but there's an example. Some of those guys like that are like that. I mean, look, I think that Jared, even though it's exaggerated, I get the concern that Nicholas Petitfrere is not able to be out there. It's not his fault. I mean, right. He's hurt, but I still think he's the starting right tackle. I think that when it comes down to it, that's what they're counting on. And so it's not great that he right now is still rehabbing. Also, I think it's not great that Tavondre Sweat got hurt early in OTAs and then hasn't been able to do anything. Now, Brian Callahan said maybe he could be out there this week, which would be a good sign. It's not the end of the world if he isn't, but that's a guy who needs reps, needs to be in great shape. And to me, there's a lot on him as a rookie in terms of what he could help this defense become. And if he's not able to, what it will lack, because Jeffrey Simmons absolutely needs help in there now that Denico Autry is in Houston.
Yeah, there's a lot on him for a lot of reasons. One, you know, you just want him to be a good player. But a lot of people have said that they kind of view this as a reach, you know, that the Titans took him too soon, that the Titans could have probably waited and still gotten him. That's not necessarily his fault, but, you know, that could very well be. So that's why you need him to really step up and do something, you know, in his rookie year. I'm not expecting him to be an all-pro or a pro bowler in his rookie year, but like you said, Jeffrey Simmons is going to need some help. I'm excited about the possibilities, though, when it comes to that. Something that Brian Callahan was asked about and brought up that, you know, Joe and I, Big Joe and I kind of played this game on Friday of you buying it or is it BS? I think it's BS. And he said that, you know, Mason Rudolph and Malik Willis are competing for the number two job. I don't think there's a competition at all. I think Mason Rudolph is the backup for this team. And, you know, I know it's just, you know, mini camp and 7-on-7, but, you know, Rudolph went 4 of 5. Willis went 1 of 5 in their 7-on-7 periods. You don't buy too much into that, but like, this isn't a competition in my mind.
I agree. I mean, I don't think it's BS that they're going to get reps to that effect. I mean, I mean that would be, you know, that would be actually kind of be rough of Callahan to say they're going to split reps, meaning Rudolph and Willis, and then not play it out that way. So I think they will. I think they'll give them both pretty close to the same reps, and I think they're both going to probably have a half each in these preseason games. I mean, we'll see how much he plays Will Levis and wants to see that starting offense.
I'm curious of that, with it being a new offense and a new coaching staff. You know, Vrabel wanted to put everybody in bubble wrap and not play him at all in right. the preseason. I'm wondering if Callahan's going to be the same way or if he's going to value that time and you might see Levis more.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a case for at least a few series with that first offense to just try to, you know, with a new – so many things that are new, including the coach and the play caller. So, but I agree with you. I mean, Mason Rudolph was brought in to be QB2 and he'll be QB2. I mean, I think he'll win. Look, is it possible for Malik Willis to come in and camp and be so freaking good that they can't ignore it? Hey, that's what coaches want, right? But based on what I've seen, and it's not like I've been blown away by Mason Rudolph, by the way, but based on what I've seen, and Willis really struggled the last day. So that's the last impression. But, yeah, that'll be how it plays out. It'll be Rudolph, and then it'll be interesting to see what happens with Willis. You know, is he on the 53? Do they cut him and try to bring him back to the practice squad? Do they cut him and let him go? I don't know. But I do think that they're going to give him those reps and give him an opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, sure. But I still think that – you know, Mason Rudolph will be the backup quarterback. Your question about is Willis on the 53 is a really good one, because you can make an argument for other positions. You know, you can make an argument that they may carry an extra receiver because they find a returner. Because, look, they're going to have to address return, because kickoff return, according to the new rule, is going to matter more again. So you got to hope that you have a guy that – can be your return, your punt returner and your kick returner. Is that the same guy? Is that two different guys? You know, we're talking about Traylon Burks playing a special team. So, I mean, that could certainly take a spot, especially if you feel like you can get a quarterback on the practice squad, whether it's Willis or somebody else.
Yeah, and of course with kick return, I think some teams are going to go to maybe a different kind of player, even a regular, like an offensive regular now, the way it's changed. So maybe you don't need to have a specialist in that spot. But like you said, there's still punt return. And then I think the ideal situation with Willis is that he's on the practice squad, because then you can use the QB rule on game day, but you also don't take up another spot from another corner or another safety or whatever it is, another offensive lineman with Malik Willis. And I think they'd probably be okay cutting him and letting him go through waivers. Like, I don't think there'd be another team out there that would sign Malik Willis to their active roster, but I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you never know that there could be a team that thinks they see something, but I'm kind of with you on that. All right, we got some tickets to give away. Alanis Morissette at Bridgestone Arena on June 23rd. This brought to you by Green Trees Company. Caller number 5 at 615-737-1025 will win a pair of tickets to see Alanis Morissette again on June 23rd at Bridgestone Arena, presented by Green Trees. Caller number 5, 615-737-1025. We'll come back, put a bow on things here on Robbie and Rex Road. Chase in for Robbie today, 1025, 106.3 The Game. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 106.3 The Game, rounding third and headed for home. Here on this Monday, Chase McCabe in for Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode. with us as well, and he's about to go on vacation. So Adam Vingan will be in for the rest of the week. Real quick, Joe, a texter on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, just a quick question, but is anyone besides me worried about Simmons? He's hurt before the season starts. Just seems like there's always something going on. I mean, is this a continuation from something from last year, or is this something new, or, you know, I don't know. I'm not that concerned yet. I mean, I think that people forget just how violent of a sport this can be, and sometimes there's just things that linger that, you know, you take more than just a handful of months to heal up. So I don't know what it is with him. I don't know if, you know, all of that, but I'm not that concerned yet.
Yeah, I don't know that there's really anything major going on physically with him. Obviously, the injury he had late in the 2022 season was significant, and he was, as he told us in Jacksonville after the season was over, I mean, he was shooting it up to be able to, it was ankle, foot,
yeah,
you know, stuff, shooting it up to be able to get out there every week and play. Look, obviously he's getting older. And so you do think about those things, and you need him to, at his contract level, you need him to be great. And I think, I mean, look, it's a big story. I just don't think right now it's like some huge, like he's fallen apart or has any kind of significant injury. It's going to be a big year for him. And again, I think that Danico Autry and Simmons were a great pairing. And, you know, at times also, Tier Tart was important, and he's gone too. So that's where I think T'Vondre Sweat with Simmons could be something like, if you remember Chase, when they drafted Simmons, it was like, wow, Simmons and Jarrell Casey, what a combo. And obviously it was kind of late. They didn't really, you know, Simmons finally started playing as a rookie. Of course, he was coming off the ACL, so he didn't get the full rookie season. And then they moved Casey, and it was like, you know, it was kind of like, actually he's really a replacement for Casey. I think with Sweat and Simmons, it's going to be more of that. Okay, two guys in there who you cannot deal with. You have to double both of them. What are you going to do? That's the idea. And if it works and Sweat is in shape and is what I thought he was last year at Texas, which is a great football player, that could be really good here for a few years with Sweat and Simmons together. I think that's the vision, but obviously a lot of things have to come together. Good shape for Sweat, health for Simmons, and we'll see.
I think what you hope for is, you know, Titans fans remember how, you know, much of a great combination Haynesworth and Vandenbosch, yes, was. That's what you want. Now, that's a little different because Vandenbosch
on the edge.
Yeah, Vandenbosch was kind of looked at as, who is this guy? And then, you know, you're double-teaming Haynesworth, and here comes Vandenbosch. You know, Sweat, I think, has that everybody's kind of looking at him going like, okay, this is a pretty good player. Now, if he could, you know, get his weight and control and all of that, then, you know, he's going to be pretty darn good. But like you just said, you got them both there. You can't double team both. Then what are you going to do? But you know, Simmons kind of, to me, ties into what we were talking about, that we've said, okay, he's a great player. He got the contract, deserved the contract. He's been good, but I kind of think there's another level for him that eventually, you know, he's going to have to hit. And he's 27 years old. He's still very much in his prime while he's older. I still think there's a lot of good years left. Okay, now's the time, you know, for him to be this dominant player. Now, I don't think he's like a sack monster. You know, I don't think you necessarily need him to be that, but he's going to be the catalyst that sets it up for a Landry or somebody on the edge to get to the quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't judge Jeffrey Simmons on a sack total this year. If he gets a few, that'd be great. And actually, you know, gets the QB to the ground. But, you know, we've seen him have obviously you think about like the Rams game where he had the sacks and was dominant, but that whole stretch, he had games where he didn't have any sacks and he dominated. And he also had, you know, he had Autry and he had Landry and he had Bud Dupree in his brief stretch of being really good for the Titans, and they were overwhelming, you know. And I think the Titans did not address edge as well as they could have, or, you know, you can't address everything, but they didn't address edge a lot. And so to me, the way that you compensate for that is a Sweat Simmons combo inside that's just impossible for teams to deal with. So I think Jeffrey Simmons can have a great year without big sack numbers, but they should lead to sacks and frequent pressure, and it should help the guys on the edge. You hope a guy like Arden Key benefits and, you know, and has a better, more consistent year this year than he did last year.
Well, he's driving a bus right now. He ran over the previous coaching staff, and he's ready to run through offenses. So, I mean, that was – I was shocked by that. I was like, damn.
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, and you know, it's I mean, it was – I've gotten into it with people who think that that was like, oh, well, that explains everything. I'm like, well, you know, it's one quote, but there were some other guys who have backed it up. I think ultimately these guys like Denard Wilson a lot, and they're impressed. And there's a obviously a level of detail that he's getting into with them that they appreciate. But you know, this is, you know, your certain age is like me, age like fine wine or, you know, vinegar or whatever. And you've seen so many like coaching changes where all of a sudden, or GM changes or athletic director changes or whatever, where all of a sudden the person who just left becomes a total idiot. You know, that person right. was totally incompetent. And now the new thing is amazing and great. And oh, it's going to be so like, after like decades of that, my default is an eye roll.
You know, it's not going to help that though, the Vrabel thing, and it's going to help John Robinson, is if this new coaching staff can figure out Treylon Burks, Caleb Farley, and Dylan Radins. Like if those three guys thrive in this new regime, then John Robinson's going to look really good, and Mike Vrabel's going to look really bad.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, well, certainly like if it's with Radins, I think then we'd probably all say, well, there you go, Bill Callahan.
Right? You're right.
There's the Bill Callahan effect. I think you're right with Burks. I mean, for sure, like offensive coach system come in and now you've unlocked him. I mean, Farley,
Farley's like, you know, if you get anything out of him one. At this point, yeah. Like you're okay.
But, and even if you do, I don't think I'm looking back at, I mean, he couldn't function, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I don't think I'm looking back at
still a bad first round pick.
Oh, it's a bad pick, exactly. And it's like, yeah, the coaches had nothing to do with Caleb Farley not being able, I mean, he hasn't been able to play, you know.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean Burks in particular would be the one, because Radins, we might, you know, I think we're all expecting for the Bill Callahan effect to take place. But if like Burks, if these guys get Burks going, then certainly you're gonna look back and say, what were you guys doing with him?
Yeah. For sure. Joe, it's been fun hanging out with you today. Enjoy vacation, and we'll see you when you get back.
All right, I've got to officiate a wedding Saturday, so my cousin's wedding. So if anybody has any advice, tweet at me. Tweet me your advice for officiating a wedding.
Okay, you buried the lead there. We could have spent
we could have done this all day. I know.
Half a show on that. Now, Big Joe and I will probably spend some time on this, but good luck all with right, that. We'll talk to you next week.
Send me your thoughts.
Absolutely. Thanks, for Joe Rexroad and Nick Kieser, I am Chase McCabe. I'm not going anywhere because Chase and Big Joe is next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.